Hello, Miss Jennifer Fondreve. It is such a pleasure to have you with me today as one of our Achieve Unite experts. So welcome to our expert community.
Thank you. That's actually the fanciest pronunciation and introduction I've ever had. So
Love it.
usually my name gets slaughtered. That was really well done. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So recovering chief marketing officer, went through three multi-billion dollar acquisitions and wrote a survivor's handbook that has turned into not just a handbook, but a playbook for executives. And now I consult business owners, executives, even private equity on how to navigate the people challenges of mergers and acquisitions and just business transitions in general.
So I'll just share a little bit about why we brought you into our Achieve Unite expert community is many of our clients are going through M&A and integrations from acquisitions. And you and I both know the degree to which you get certain things right up front is the degree to which we're successful later. And obviously the partner ecosystem is a big part of that. So why don't you weigh in on what your, when you think about M&A, what do you think the biggest considerations are for the tech companies who are doing that today?
Well, it's the reason why I started the business that I did. It's anticipating those people challenges. 70 to 90% failure rate for mergers and acquisitions, that's been a consistent percentage for over a decade. And in that 70 to 90%, typically what's commented on are the unexpected people challenges. And my reaction to that is they're not unexpected. You can expect them and you can actually prepare for them and plan for them. So that's why I do the work that I do, which is recognizing that what looks perfect on paper, I'm sure you've had this experience, right? The strategy really looks sharp, but what you can't always anticipate is human nature and how people are going to react. And as you and I both know, and all we need to do is look at the pandemic to prove this, people don't react well to change. Particularly when change is thrust upon them suddenly. And so that's what I really focus in on is helping business owners, executives, sales leaders on how to anticipate that and how to navigate through it.
How to navigate through that. And what's so interesting is, we used to talk about our tech companies and we talk about, the customers and the internal employees. Well, now we have to look at it in a much broader context, right? It's who are all of the stakeholders. So we
Right.
have our employees, we have our customers, we have different types of business partners, we have the industry community, and each one of those, especially in M&A, have to really be looked at and incorporated ahead of time,
Right.
and part of the change, right?
Absolutely. And what's interesting, and this is what I often advise executives around, particularly when they're just in the consideration stage. Oftentimes the thought is, well, our customers keep asking us. They'd love for us to be a one-stop shop. Customers might say that, but there's also a recognition and a lot of baggage, negative baggage around mergers and acquisitions. So customers might say that, but they're also not willing to give up the turnaround time, right? So typically what happens in a post-M&A deal is suddenly a decision that could have been made in a week. Now there are layers of approvals as people are figuring out how the two systems integrate and who leads, who takes the customer relationship first. And so customers, if you actually drill down, they'll say, absolutely, one-stop shop would be great, but not if I have to give up, the person who I've worked with, key to which you answered my problems. Fact that the pricing that I used to get was super, but now, right, maybe you used to sell me the high-end version of this, but now, if I'm going to have to deal with somebody who's trying to sell me a portfolio and I don't want the portfolio, I just want what you've always offered me. All of that complexity weighs into how your customers feel about the merger or the acquisition. So I always advise executives when they're considering, again, looks great on paper, but think about what your customer really wants. And then also how the impact of this on sales. If your sales team has been used to selling your product, at the expense of saying, well, these other guys don't do it well, either they're cheaper or they don't serve the same purpose, but now you've brought them all together and I've got to sell a portfolio. Your sales team can equally be frustrated to say, well, how am I going to sell something that I used to actually say was terrible?
Yeah, right.
So all of those factor in. And that's a big part of what I do when working with executives is to help them anticipate and think through that, as well as how to support sales when they're just.
And a couple of thoughts. One is, you know, the devil's in the details, right? We were just talking with a client and, you know, these are not the things you can do at the surface level. These are the things that have to go all the way to the core of the onion, right? Or the core of the apple. So, you know, I think that's critical. And then the second thing that really struck me as you were talking is about, you know, we talk about the customer experience, we talk about the partner experience, and, you know, you have to really anticipate ahead of time all of the implications on that customer journey, on that customer experience, same thing on the partner journey and the partner experience. Right. And, you know, and for that matter, the other stakeholders that we started the conversation with.
Right. Absolutely. And that journey, scenario planning, essentially. Okay. Once we do the deal, that's why one of the exercises to do is a pre-mortem, right? So we know the post-mortem, right? The patient dies and we try and analyze why. A pre-mortem is an exercise to essentially say, okay, we've done the deal. Now let's go through all the ways this could go wrong. What are the potential scenarios, both internal obstacles as well as external. And as you highlight, you know, what's that journey look like?
Yes.
Let's say a new government regulation comes out or a competitor moves and launches a product we hadn't anticipated.
Right.
You really need
to do that
scenario planning to anticipate and prepare.
I love the pre-mortem. That's brilliant. Okay. So tell us about, in your opinion, why do these M&A deals, you know, and maybe separate out a big company to big company type merger or acquisition, and then a large company acquiring small companies. And tell us in your mind, you know, what are the differences and when do they fail? When do they succeed?
Well, that's what's interesting. When I did my research, so for the book, I interviewed 60 plus executives, CEOs, CFOs, private equity, HR, middle managers. And I intentionally made sure that they were both practitioners and survivors. So we had people who had been acquired, who were acquirers. And what's interesting is it there is no distinction. I mean, granted, multi-billion dollar acquisitions have certain variables that are unique to, you know, as one CEO said to me, the bigger the billions, the bigger the bloodbath. But, you know, the consistent thing was, you know, three things tend to come out, and even other articles have been written about this, right? It's higher than anticipated complexity in terms of systems integration, all of that.
Right.
A difficult cultural fit is usually, you know, one of the top three that noted. And then third, oftentimes, and I'm sure seen this as well, synergies that aren't realized, right? They look to find efficiencies, maybe redundancies, and those aren't realized because the systems either don't talk well or one system works better than another, but the transition to that system is overly complicated and delays, you know, the company's ability to deliver products. But underlining each of these, and it's, you know, I made the reference to it earlier, are the unanticipated people problems, right? How people adapt to change. And that happens whether it's a Fortune 500 company or a mid-market company. That's what I look to mitigate, is recognizing that aspect, the people aspect of the strategy, and how to think that through and you know, the not to have your productivity drop off a cliff, to help your workforce, whether again, you're Fortune 500 or mid-market, how to explain the vision for why you did the merger or the acquisition in the first place, and help people to understand how they can contribute to that.
Oftentimes, absolutely.
That vision, translating it for people, That's the part that's missed.
That's the part. One of the things we just finished with a client, and it was so successful, is they had put two companies together and they had a new leadership team and a new team in whole. And the executive sponsored our ACE leadership program to help them come together and build trust as a team. And it was That's so great. Neat. I know, it was really fun. And now they're getting ready to look at the ACE. We have ACE Me and ACE We. You know, one is how do I operate in the organization? And the second one is how do I achieve influence in the organization? You know, so that one would be called ACE We. And both of those are equally as important, right? One is how I show up myself authentically and what are my skills to deal with this? And then the second part of it is how do I influence and operate in the group and with my partners? And so, you know, I really feel like those, I don't think one is more important than the other.
No, and it's why I've had so many people say to me, what you do is so unique, because I've been an executive. I've been an executive through three multi-billion dollar acquisitions. I know the reason for the deal, right? It's a growth strategy play. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, if you aren't prepared as a leader for some of the reactions, right? The stumbles that your team can go through, that the organization can go through, it can be very difficult for a leader, because one, exactly as you said, I'm figuring out, well, what does this mean for me?
Right.
What does it mean for me in my future?
Right.
And secondly, if I've been an authentic leader, someone who's been very transparent, and now suddenly I say, hey, we're getting acquired, and I, you know, we're still determining the strategy.
Yeah, that's
put the leader in a really tough position.
Right.
So I work with executive teams and individual leaders to help them prepare for that. And then also how to lead. So not only they're figuring it out for themselves, but able to lead their teams when things are still being figured out.
And that's part of why we're really excited to have you as an expert. And then also your deep analytical knowledge and sort of advisory skills in this arena as well.
Thank you. You know, you mentioned something too, Teresa, that I think is critical. It's the point about trust, right? The program that you just went through and how to build trust, because that is, it's a key ingredient for success. When people in the company trust one another, you can cut people a lot of slack with trust there.
With trust.
It's part with mergers and acquisitions is it tends to undermine trust almost immediately.
Right.
People can, particularly if your frontline leaders had no idea this was in the works, they can feel blindsided.
Yeah.
So suddenly, and I talked about this in my Harvard Business Review article,
that
you can have this us versus them dynamic. It's not just our company versus their company, but it can be frontline leaders versus executives. Because suddenly, as a frontline leader, I'm looking at this saying, okay, I thought we had some trust here. I didn't know this was happening. I've now got three times as much work. At least these are all the impressions. This is all
the impressions they have. And, you know, maybe we'll just finish up on this is, you know, there's individual trust, there's organization trust, and there's inter-organization trust, right? And the implication of, you know, these companies coming together and unifying their strategy is to whether they're trustworthy as an organization,
right?
Their partners and their clients.
Yeah. So I was thrilled to hear that trust, developing that trust was a key part of the exercise that the teams were doing, because that's absolutely critical.
It is. It's absolutely critical. Good. Any closing comments?
The one key comment that I would make, particularly knowing your audience, is use what serves your customer best as the North Star.
Yes.
Because when companies come together, there's always a tendency, well, we did it this way and it's the best way. And we did it this way and it's the best way. And finding compromise can be difficult because you both think you do it best.
Mm-hmm.
When you use what's best for your customer as your North Star, that can mitigate a lot of this us versus them, you know, finding common ground can be found when you look at it from the standpoint of what will serve our customer best, not my way is better than your way.
My way better. Yeah. I mean, taking the emotion out, which is very hard, you know, that's a whole nother conversation. Maybe that'll be our next conversation.
Yes.
So, yeah. Well, thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.